Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, bound car, 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing, testing. Hey, boss. You know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. You'll turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him, and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, filling in for The Download with Justin Kaufman. And as I said to Ro just a few minutes ago, I am doing The Upload. It's a little different, and you'll see that very quickly. I've got a jam-packed, I'm doing once again my imitation of 4 pounds of radio baloney in a one-pound bag, and we have got this one-pound bag stuffed to the brim tonight, on from tonight from 7 until 11. Hope you will stay for the entire broadcast. I'm staying. I don't see why you shouldn't, okay? Just some quick things, as I teased with Ro before. I'm able to channel Ron Santo, and what better time to talk to one of the all-time greats in Chicago history than this season right now with this amazing start. The Cubs have the most wins in Major League Baseball. As it stands right now, I believe still the best record in Major League Baseball. So what better time to talk to good old number 10? And not only are we going to channel Ronnie, but to interview him tonight as a special guest is one of the ultimate in sports radio broadcasting history, the infamous Mr. Chet Chitchat. Chet Chitchat talking to Ronnie at 7:30. Just the right ingredients for a hilarious radio mess, which is exactly what this show is going to be tonight. So if you like a radio mess, stay tuned. We're also going to talk some politics later on with a good friend of mine who is, everybody talks about, who is this Republican establishment? I've got a friend who is the Republican establishment and proud of it. So we're going to get a little back and forth with him and get a perspective as to where we are after yesterday's New York primary and the upcoming ones now every couple of weeks as we make our way to June 7th and the final primary in California and see what's going to happen on the Republican side. So we'll talk to Doug O'Brien, who's a political strategist here in the Chicago and Illinois area. Also former chief of staff for Senator Kirk. So, hey, I'm able to get the biggies. I land the big fishes, okay? And as well, what do we got? Oh, we're going to talk a little vinyl, as I mentioned as well, too. Val Calametti from Val's Hallow, which has been in Oak Park. It's an institution in Oak Park for more than 40 years, and Val's going to come in and talk about how Record Store Day was last weekend on Saturday, as well as this whole vinyl phenomenon, which is obviously probably good for her business as she owns an independent record store. We've seen so many chain stores, especially Tower Records, go by the wayside. And also, Val worked for Capitol Records in the 1960s when the Beatles and the Beach Boys were at their peak, and Val was there. So maybe we'll be able to pick her brain and get some of those stories as well. And then later on, we will do another segment of our famous Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler talking about, you know what today is, folks? It's 420, April 20th, 420. It's Cannabis Day. It's Pot Day. Did you know that? Did you notice everybody walking a little slower around here? Did you notice everybody a little more laid back? I don't know how it is here, but now my producer tonight is Sean. Are you there, Sean?
I'm here.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do, and we could talk about this a little later, but initially we were talking about getting somebody on from Colorado where...
Absolutely.
Where, you know, marijuana now is legal as a recreational drug. And so for like the last 4 days... Sean has been calling people to come on so we can just get it. Like, how was, you know, because today has to be their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
this is their day.
Absolutely.
And the funny thing is, I thought it'd be great to talk to some guy. If he's stoned, it's even better. And I don't know if they're dubologists. You know, there used to be bartenders, and now they're mixologists.
Right.
I don't know if the guys who sell marijuana are dubiologists or dubologists or jointologists. I don't know what their phrase is. I'm sure they have a title because we all need titles today. But so we wanted to have somebody on and just have a little fun and find out. And what did these guys, what did most of these guys say to you?
We reached out to just about the entire state of Colorado, about 20 dispensaries.
And what did we get back?
And we got back, dude, like we're going to be busy all day and we close at 7, so.
And we're not hanging around, man. We're not talking.
We want to be part of the festivities.
We are going to be baked by 7.
Exactly.
Wow. Here, free publicity. Doesn't matter to the stoner. They need their bowl. So we'll have some stoner fun toward the end of the show. I'm going to have to take a quick break here, but when I come back, I have to tell you once again, another episode, another chapter in the misadventures of Elton Jim. And this time, concerns my recent last weekend short getaway to Cape Cod. You'll want to be around for this. And we're back here at WGN, 720 AM in Chicago. My name is Elton Jim Toronto, filling in for The Download and Justin Kaufman. And as I was saying before the break, unfortunately, as if you are a regular listener of me over the years, you know that nothing is ever easy for me. And so my wife and I went on a little 4-day getaway, if you will, to the Cape. We went to the Cape. We went over to the Cape over by Massachusetts over there.
Did you take your private jet?
Hey, is that Rob Martia?
It is Rob Martia.
Okay, how you doing there, Rob?
I'm good. Did you take your private jet this time?
No. We actually went Hertz. We rented. We drove. We drove the rough lands of Massachusetts. And I have to say, so essentially you said that, Rob. So we get in the car, right? And we get the rent-a-car, and my wife has the navigation on her phone. I might as well start playing my theme song for these misadventures because it's, you know what it is. So we get into the car and we're taking I-93 south out of Boston. We'll take that to Route 3, which becomes then Route 6 over the Sangamon Bridge and takes you to the Cape. And we're going to go to Provincetown, which is the uppermost part of the Cape. But the funny thing is that we're on I-93 coming out of Boston, and so you know how the navigation woman tells you what to do? Like, get ready, get to your right, and all that stuff? Do you have that on yours, Rob?
In 500 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
Veer right.
Yeah, okay, so that's usually how they sound. Well, when we get out of Boston on our way to Cape Cod, she says, and stay on 3 until you get to Cape Cod. I swear I felt like I was hearing my navigation system getting the Boston accent. She said Cod, not Cod. It's Cod. She said, take it to take Cod. And then I thought to myself, how great would it be if you had a navigation system? And as you went into different regions of the country, the voice changed. So say you're driving to Chicago and you're going to go to Tennessee. And all of a sudden, she says, do that again, Rob.
Veer right in 500 yards.
And then after you veer right 500 yards and you go into Tennessee, then she goes, hey, darling, at the next right, sweetie, why don't you take a bear right, and then you'll get on Dixie Highway, and it'll take you right to where you want to go. And I'll be right back with you in about 5 more miles, darling. How great would that be? Or if you go to Canada. And aren't you from Canada, or you lived in Canada?
I lived in Canada.
Oh, you lived in Canada. So how great would that be? You cross over the border, and in 1 minute, do your line, Rob.
Veer right in 500 yards.
Exactly. And then you go that 500 yards, and you're in the Canadian border, and lo and behold, the guy says, oh, geez, over by the next light there, would you take a left? And then you're going to be staying straight right over until you see one of them bears, and when you take the bear, then that's where you stop.
Well, and then every instruction would be punctuated with the rhetorical, eh? Hey, this is great, eh?
Yeah, exactly. How great would this be?
Look at our roads here in Canada, eh?
Yeah, so, I mean, wouldn't that be... Now, there's an app. You know, I don't have an iPhone. I have a flip phone. This was all on my wife's iPhone. But my thing is, now, if there was a regional navigation system with that, that would be cool to me. I might even jump into the 21st century. Right now, I'm happy in the 90s. But I would, if they did that, that would be fun. I would love to hear, because it gets you used to the voices you're going to hear when you get to your destination.
Now, if you had that app, if one existed,
yeah.
If you're in a place, for instance, like New York, would the voice be particularly belligerent?
Hey, take a right, would you?
I'm walking here.
You son of a bee. Or
tourists.
Or when you get to Boston, they go, and don't forget to park your car by the harbor. In fact, I was on a ferry, and I heard these two guys, standing next to me, and they were from Boston, and they were talking, because we're going to Nantucket Island, and you have to take a ferry to get there. And I heard the guy actually say, where did you park? And I went, oh, my God, it's real. I mean, he really said park. I couldn't believe it. I had to laugh to myself. Didn't laugh to him.
And then they get water out of the bubbler.
At the bubbler. Oh, that's bubbler. In Canada, though, right?
Rhode Island, parts of Massachusetts, yeah.
Now, I'm running a little long. We ran a little long before I got on, so I'm going to... But I want to bring on, at least for this beginning point here, and I'm going to have to hold them over until the next segment. But Eddie, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, this is Eddie. And Eddie plays a major role in my misadventures in Cape Cod. And Eddie...
From Rhode Island.
What's that?
I'm from Rhode Island, so I have the Rhode Island accent.
Oh, you are from Rhode Island.
I am. Park your car in the yard near the garden.
There you go. Well, I wanted to bring on Eddie because I had a fun, now in retrospect, a fun, interesting story that happened to me in true Elton Jim misadventures fashion. And Eddie was a part of it. And I figured I have to get Eddie. So Eddie works at the hotel that we stayed in, the Carpe Diem in Provincetown. And he's such a major part of this story. So I apologize for being late. Do you have a couple of minutes you can hold on?
Yes.
Okay, yes, excellent. Because I really want you to, you're really going to be able to sell this for me, Eddie. I know you're going to come through for me. But yeah, this is a typical Elton Jim Toronto misadventure that I was worried about the first half hour of the show. And then after this happened, I said, well, I've got no problems. I've got material. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll do the news, and we'll come back with Eddie. And then I promise we're going to do Chet Chit Chat and Ron Santo right after that. But we'll be right back after this. No switching. And
time in New England took me away to long, rocky beaches, you by the bay.
And it's Elton Jim. Back here at WGN, filling in for Justin Kaufman. We're doing the upload tonight, not the download. We're up. We're positive, okay? And I'm glad to be back here on WGN. And just before the news, I started to tell a story about one of my recent misadventures that just happened this weekend. So this is right out of the oven. This is right out of the ink is still wet on this one. I wondered if I had anything to talk about on the radio show, and then I went to Cape Cod. So as I've said, this is my theme song for most of my misadventures. And so on the phone here, we have Eddie. How you doing, Eddie?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you, Jim?
Now, what is your, you know what, I only called you Eddie for like 2 days. What is your full name? Do you have a full name, or are you just like Madonna?
Well, a little of both. My full name is Edward Lupien.
Oh, okay. Because on your card, it says Eddie.
Correct. Well,
yes.
Yeah, I should have my full name.
Okay.
But well, I am like Madonna. I also go by Drunkarella.
Yeah, drunk. Yeah, well, believe me, Eddie, we're going to talk about that, too. Okay. That's part two of the story, believe me. That's why I have you on. I could tell the first part of the story. I wanted to get into this.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's set the stage. So my wife and I drive out to Provincetown, and we go to a beautiful hotel, kind of a bed and breakfast-ish kind of place with... a nice little courtyard and just very quaint. It was exactly what we were looking for. The place called Carpe Diem in Provincetown. And so there's Eddie, who greets us at the door, or, you know, right at the desk. And very nice guy. And he gives us a nice quick tour. And he says that there's going to be cookies in the dining room. And, you know, and then, although right off the bat, I had a sense that this was going to be a fun adventure because Eddie says, and then over there, behind the wall, behind that gate there, is the hot tub and the sauna. Clothing optional.
Yes.
Wow. I knew we were in a different spot, which is fine with me. I've got no problem with that, but it was, I loved how you just dropped that in. It was very good, Eddie.
it just seems normal to me.
Yeah, well, I know, exactly. Now, I had no idea before we got there, and, you know, once again, hey, my nickname is Elton Jim, so that's where I'm coming from. But I did not know that Provincetown has a huge gay and lesbian population.
Yes, it's been gay since the Pirates.
And you were telling me that the Pirates actually used to land there and do some pretty rough stuff, huh?
Yeah, it was called Helltown back in the day because there was, like, no order, no police, and they would drug boys and bring them here from New York. So it's been you know, like this for a long
Now,
how time.
How come that's not in Johnny Depp's movie? I've never seen that in Pirates of the Caribbean. I've never seen that little slice of history.
They skipped over us in that movie.
Well, so here's the reason I say this is because one of the things. So now we had a very nice dinner on one of Eddie's recommendations, and so I come there the next morning and I said, okay, well, what's there to see here? What should we do here? And he says, well, you know, it's a little off season. As can I quote you here, Eddie? We're on the shoulder.
Yep.
We're on the shoulder.
Shoulder season. Yeah.
Shoulder season. See, I listen when you talk, and so. He says, but, you know, a lot of stuff, there's some things open, some not, but it's not too crowded. But what you have to see, Eddie says to me, you have to see the Pilgrim plaque. And I said, well, what's the Pilgrim plaque? He said, well, you know, even though everybody talks about Plymouth Rock, where the Pilgrims landed, in reality, you said what?
That they landed here first.
They landed. Now, what is it, just bad PR or what? How did Plymouth Rock get all the attention?
Well, that's the first settlement. Where Provincetown was actually in a lawsuit with Plymouth because they claimed that they were the first landing spot, but Provincetown is the first landing spot where the Mayflower Compact was signed. And then they, you know, trudged their way over to Plymouth, which is the first settlement.
And that does make sense because if you look at a map, the topography of Massachusetts, the Cape is farther out into the ocean.
Correct.
Than where Plymouth is, more on the actual coastline of the United States. So it would make sense that they would have hit the Cape before they hit the mainland.
Correct. Yeah, Plymouth has that tiny rock. We actually have the first pilgrims that had died in our pilgrim cemetery.
So once again, Eddie, as you can see, he knows his stuff about his town, and he's proud of it. And so he says, you've got to go see the Pilgrim plaque. And he says, it's not far. It's a delightful walk. Right down our main street, which is Commercial Avenue, Commercial Street. I'm sorry. He says, he gives me the map and he shows me. He says, look, it's not very far. You just follow the street until it ends. And sure enough, at the dead end of the street, it says that there's Pilgrim plaque, and it shows that the street kind of angles down a little. But he says it's a nice 25 minute walk. Now, in Eddie's defense, I did not tell him that about 5 months ago, I seriously hurt my Achilles tendon. And then because of that, favoring the one leg, I got a bone spur in my other one. So I've been going to physical therapy for about 3 or 4 months. So I'm not walking the best, but I've just in the last 3 weeks, thanks to my amazing physical therapist, Dr. Laura Smith at the Functional Health and Wellness Place, the physical therapy clinic in Oak Park. And I just say that because she's really done a great job and I really appreciate the work she's done. And she's actually made me pain-free for the first time in about 5 months, and that has felt great. So I was feeling very confident, thanks to the work that Dr. Laura has been doing with me. I felt confident about this 25-minute walk. So I didn't even mind. I didn't bother to tell you, Eddie, because I didn't want to look like I was a wimp in front of an Eddie, right?
Sure.
You know, exactly. I don't want to say, geez, that's a far walk for me. Because when I asked Eddie how far is it a walk, what did you say that you've walked that in?
I've walked that walk a bunch of times in heels.
In heels. And so once again, that gets to part two of, what was it, Drunkzilla?
Drunkarella.
Drunkarella. Okay. Keep that in mind, folks. Just remember the words Drunkarella. So now Eddie says, so he gives me the map and he says, oh, it'll be a beautiful walk and you see the Pilgrim plaque and then you can go and see a lighthouse. And right on the map, there's this little lighthouse. That's so, you know, hey, if you go to Cape Cod, you want to see a lighthouse. So I'm like, Eddie, you know, this is fantastic. I'm going to see a plaque. I'm going to see a lighthouse. I've got my camera. I'm ready to go. I'm in full tourist mode. I'm in full P-Town mode, if you will. So my wife and I start walking. And, you know, it's the streets are, you know, it's basically most of the towns in Cape Cod, as well as, you know, it seems like most of those the towns. And maybe, you know, people won't get it as much. You won't understand this, Eddie, but people here will. Most of the towns in Cape Cod are like, if you were in Long Grove during the 80s, with the little streets, with the nice little shops that have restaurants and shops, and they've got, you know, Christmas stores, and they've got little antique places, and they've got potpourri with the delicious soaps, and all those nice little nickety-nack kind of stores. That's basically what most of the towns in Cape Cod are like that. But they're also very old, and so a lot of the streets are uneven, and they're all bricked with the nice, you know, orange brick, but they're uneven sometimes. So we start walking, and we're, you know, it's a quaint little town. The beautiful day, the sun was out, and I'm like, Eddie is my guy. He's sending me to the plaque. So we keep walking, and we're walking, and we're walking, and even though my foot has felt great, my feet have felt great for like the last 3 weeks. I haven't walked this steady for as long as a time, I guess. And so now suddenly I was getting a little tired, and my foot was hurting, and even actually my back began to hurt because, you know, you start using all these different muscles. And then I'm looking at the map, and I'm not seeing, even from a distance, I'm like, where's this lighthouse? Eddie told me there's a lighthouse. I got to think there's a nice big lighthouse that even if I don't make it to the plaque, from a distance, I'll see this lighthouse, because when you see a lighthouse on television, they're huge. So we're walking and we're walking. And now we go into, now we're out of the commercial district. And now we're like on a residential street. And I'm like, so now, Eddie, I love you, Eddie. But man, the names I was calling you. And I'm like, where is Eddie sending us? We are now on, there were guys, there were like a bunch of construction guys that were you know, building some new houses and doing all this construction. And they even were looking at us like, why are you here? Why are you walking here? You know, when you get that feeling from somebody, you say to yourself, oh, I don't know if this is right. Maybe tourists aren't always here. So we find this little patch of sand, and I still don't see this lighthouse. I'm like, where's this lighthouse? At the very least, I should be able to see a lighthouse. So finally, I'm dying. I sit down. So I said, look, I don't know where this is. Let's walk back to the hotel. But I'm driving the car because I got to see this damn plaque. And it better be a good plaque because now I'm dying. So we get back to our hotel now. We left at 10:15 after we saw you in the morning, Eddie. We got back at and we did stop at a few places. We got back at noon. It took us 3 minutes in the car to get there, Eddie. 3 minutes. And my feet were fine in the car.
Of course.
Now, like I said, I didn't tell you. So now we get there, and there's just this little plaque. And I still don't see the lighthouse, except there's one way in the distance, and it's this stubby little thing. Eddie, P-Town needs, Eddie, can you get, I mean, why is Provincetown the home of the stocky lighthouse?
I have no idea.
You need a tall, lanky lighthouse. Even when we went to this town, Chatham, they were bragging about their lighthouse. We go to see their lighthouse, short and stubby. I want a giant lighthouse. Do I have to go to Maine? Where do I have to go to see one of these?
So I don't know. Yeah, ours are so old. I mean, I guess they didn't build them over 20 feet high.
So now we go out and we go in. We actually saw some whales, and Eddie did, you know, he gave us some nice directions, and we saw some whales spewing, you know, their blowholes and all that. So that was great. But I come back later, and it's about 8 o'clock, and we're just sitting in the courtyard there, and we bought some wine and cheese, and we're just doing the whole thing. And we didn't go in the clothing optional area though. And so then Eddie comes out and we start talking, and I want to just share a little bit of our conversation, and then I want Eddie to tell his story about, what is it, got Dragzilla,
Drunkarella.
So I have to say, Eddie, I love you, but my God, you sent me on such a trek that I was calling you more names. I'm like, when I get back in that freaking Eddie.
I sent so many people there literally today.
Are you serious? And did they ever come back? Did they ever come back? I'm sure they didn't come back. At one point, I didn't even know if we were still in Massachusetts. Oh, but anyway, hold on, Eddie. I appreciate your time, and because I want to get the second part of this story. And we had such a great time, and you were, and your recommendations and your great hotel certainly were a reason for that. We had a great time. Never been there before, and definitely going to come back.
Thank you.
Hold on a second. We're more misadventures with Elton, Jim, and Eddie here at WGN, and we'll be right back. No switching. And we're back here at WGN, AM 720 in Chicago. I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and just recapping here, we're going to finish off my latest misadventure, this time my supposed 25-minute walk, which wound up being almost 2 hours, to see a plaque. And not even a big plaque. Now, come on, Eddie. I mean, talk to the people there. And let's get a real plaque. If you guys are really where the Pilgrims first landed, that's big stuff. Because I've been to Plymouth, and they've got this that rock there, and they've got it like in a giant gazebo. You guys need to...
The original rock.
I know. Isn't that funny? It isn't even there. But anyway, so I was talking about my recent trip to Cape Cod last week, and Eddie, is it Lupien?
Yes.
Yeah, Eddie Lupien from the Carpe Diem Guest House and Spa in Provincetown, Massachusetts. So now we get done with our adventure of the day, and I'm all rested, and I'm just recapping the day and my long walk. At least it was a good morning constitutional. You know, I was able to work off the nice meal the night before. But so now I see Eddie and his husband and in the courtyard, and so I'm telling Eddie about our day, and I had to laugh, Eddie, because I was telling you, like I said, at one point, I felt like I was Moses in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. Yeah. I was like, where am I going? And all of a sudden, I saw a gold calf. I mean, they were telling me, where's Moses? He's not here I thought I had to split the sea, the bay there or something, to get back to civilization. But anyway, so there's Eddie. And now I'm complaining. And what did you say to me, Eddie? Now, once again, I love you, Eddie. I wouldn't have called you back. But I think it's hilarious. I mean, and we got along well. So I took no offense, but I thought this was great. At the same time, Eddie, I'm still a guest at your place, right?
Correct.
I'm still a guest. I'm still a paying guest. We're not friends yet. Okay? I haven't checked out. So I'm telling my story. And I tend to exaggerate. Fine. You know, for comic effect. So I'm telling the story to Eddie. And what was your comment back to me about my complaining?
That you sound like my father.
I can't believe, I'm sitting there going, I mean, it was a great line, but I'm like, you know, does this guy know that right today I'm still his boss? And he gives me, it was a great shot. It was a great line. But I was like, wow, Eddie's feeling very comfortable. But so now you have been there for how long?
I've been there about 5 years.
5 years. And you've been at the Carpe Diem?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So here's the best part. So there's a place. What's the name of that hotel where the central house is?
That's the Crown and Anchor.
The Crown and Anchor. So that's the big hangout, right?
Correct.
That's the big place in P-Town. Now, I'm sure that, once again, this was the shoulder of the season, as Eddie explained it. So it wasn't teeming with people. I'm sure in the summer, though, that place has to be going crazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're talking Speedos and thongs, right?
Off season is 2,000 people. And so in the summer, a July day or so, there'll be 70,000 people in town.
70,000, and your population is about 3 aside from that.
Yeah, which is a lot less. A lot of people are liars. They're still traveling all winter.
So tell me, on the week, I always make a joke. This is why this is so great. I always make a joke. Somebody talks about, you know, dressing up like a woman, and I say, well, only on the weekends. But, Eddie, that's what you do, don't you?
That is what I do, yeah.
So now, what is the name of your character?
It's Drunkarella.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's fierce. She's feisty. She's actually performing this weekend at the Crown and Anchor.
Oh, very good. So if you're up in Provincetown.
Correct. Yeah, come see us. Show's at 8 o'clock.
And what do you do? Do you sing or do you tell bawdy jokes or what do you do?
I lip sync. I can, you know, get up and tell some jokes. I have a hidden talent that I double dutch in heels.
Oh, okay. Is that code for something?
Double dutch, jump rope with two.
Oh, phew, okay. I thought it was some sexual code word.
No, we'll keep it clean.
Now, you know, the fun thing, Eddie, your voice, I love your accent. So that's a Rhode Island accent?
It is, born and raised.
I would say it's, now don't take offense, because I love you, Eddie. But I hear a hint, not as gruff, but I hear a hint of Harvey Fierstein. Have anybody ever told you that?
No.
I just a little. With the way you end your words.
Oh, all right. Well, it has nothing to do with 420.
Well, I'll tell you. Eddie, you took great care of us. It's a great place. If you're ever in Provincetown, I'm not getting paid for this, folks. I just had a great time. The place is called Carpe Diem in Provincetown. And ask for Eddie. He will definitely steer you right. Thanks for taking time out. I really had a great time, and I appreciate you sharing your time with us today.
Anytime, Jim. Thank you, and I hope to see you soon.
And hopefully, by when I come back, you'll have some real lighthouses over there.
Yeah, maybe a segue for you so that you don't have to watch it.
Barumpum! See, Eddie, you can't leave without giving me a shot. Just when I thought you were gone, you pull me back in.
It's what I do.
It's what you do. Well, you do a great job. Take care, Eddie.
Thank you, you too.
All right, bye-bye. Oh, Eddie from Cape Cod. You got to love him. We'll be right back right after this. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, filling in for Justin Kaufman in the download tonight. We'll be here till 11. It's about 10 minutes after 8. And, boy, it's hard to imagine a better sports story while the Hawks are struggling. Both baseball teams are doing well, but one thing that is amazing is that not only has there been extraordinary anticipation and hype for this upcoming Cubs season, 2016, based on the successful season and surprising season they had last year. Lots of hype, lots of anticipation, and most Cub teams would crumble under this pressure. Meanwhile, the 2016 version has the best record in baseball. 11 wins, 11-3. Did they win today, Sean? Do we know if they won or were they rained out?
No, they lost 5-3.
They did lose, so they're 11-4. But they still have the most, I think they still have the most wins in Major League Baseball. So I thought it's only fitting that we talk to one of our favorites here. And even though he is no longer with us, I am able to channel him. And as you know, he's a legendary Hall of Famer. Finally got into the Hall of Fame, unfortunately, after he passed away. But now he speaks to us from his ultimate skybox. He's got the best view. There's no obstructions of rooftops or anything. He just looks right down. He's got the best seat in the house. And, of course, I'm talking about good old number 10, Ronnie. And I thought, well, who better to interview Ronnie than one of the great legends in Chicago sports history? And, of course, that has to be none other than Mr. Chet Chitchat. Are you there, Chet?
Yes, sir, I'm Ronnie. Oh, it's so good to talk to you once again. Well, I never really did talk. You never let me talk.
Wait a minute, Ronnie. Wait a minute, Chet. I haven't brought Ronnie on yet.
Oh, I thought that was Ronnie. See, I don't even know what to sound like, Ronnie, because you never talk to me. How much could I get an interview? Oh, sure, you talk to Jack Quinlan. Oh, sure, you talk to Vince Lloyd. Oh, sure, you talk to Jack Brickhouse. Oh, sure, you talk to every Tom, Dick, and Harry Carey, of course. But, you know, you never talk to me, but you'll talk to me now that you're dead. Okay,
bye. Hey, big boy. Chit, Tret? What is it?
Whatever, it doesn't matter.
I remember you.
Let me ask you, Ronnie, what's the attendance up there at Heaven today? Let's play the attendance game.
Right now it's 700,000,420.
Sure, sure. I think you were the closest one, so I think you would a pair of Perfect Plus pantyhose from the Wally Phillips closet.
Well, you know what? You know what, Chet? In fact, that attendance here in heaven is one more than it was, because guess who just walked in yesterday?
Oh, not good old number 32.
Yes, my good friend, number 32, Milt Pappas.
Wait a minute. I thought he would be in purgatory for a while. You know what?
No, that's where Bruce Fleming is.
Well, is Bruce Fleming dead?
No.
I guess.
No, wait a minute. But wait a minute. I've got the book. December doesn't look like a good month for Bruce Fleming.
It doesn't really.
You know, no, he better not cross the street. That's all I can say.
I was worried a little bit about Milt because, you know, there was a little controversy surrounding Milt. I'm not talking about his wife dying of the water retention.
Oh, come on now. His wife. Hey, now, wait a minute. Milt Pappas' wife was a delicate flower.
Yes, there's no question about it. It's a little bit drenched, I guess, too.
But oh, you are vicious.
Milt, here's the thing. I'm wondering that you're in purgatory.
No, you're talking to Ronnie. I'm just talking about Milt.
I mean... You know, I'm a little out of practice.
Would you get your former dead Cub players right? Yes, I'm Ronnie. I was number 10. Milt was 32.
All right.
And his hands. And remember, he used to pitch with his dangling hands. And if you ever saw him in the shower, that's not all that was dangling.
Oh, boy, those sideburns were dangling, too. Man, did you see that? Shucks on that guy. But here's the thing, Bill. Ronnie.
No, it's Ronnie.
Yes, Ron. Ron Santo, good number 10.
Right.
Where were you from, anyway, Ron?
I was from Arizona.
Exactly.
No, I was from Seattle. No, I'm from Seattle.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know where I'm from.
Well, of course, now you're eternal. Let me ask you this about Milt.
Yes.
Think about Bill. He's in purgatory because he never forgave Bruce Fleming. And I happen to believe that Bill Pappas took to his grave a dark secret. Not about his wife. No, that was on the up and up. Here's the thing about ball four. He thought it was ball four. Did you talk to him? Did he really think it was actually ball four and he shouldn't have gotten the perfect game?
Well, Bill not only, he literally took that anger to his grave. And now he's taking it to eternity. Because I just saw him yelling at Ernie Banks.
How can you yell at Ernie Banks?
Well,
he's playing three. You know, here's the thing, Ronnie, did you take the anchor to your grave? Because the 69 Cubs, you never got over it.
Well, forget about. Hey, I got news for you, Tret, whatever it is,
exactly.
Whatever. I wasn't mad about 69. What I was mad about. Is I had more than 300 homers. I had like 1,700 RBIs.
Wait a minute, Ronnie, give it a rest, dead man. They put you in the Hall of Fame.
They put me in the Hall of Fame after I died. My stats didn't change. Come on.
Well, then
the Chicago Cubs, they don't give me a statue when I'm alive.
I've
seen the statue from the top of my head. I can't even see it.
Ronnie, here's the thing.
What, Chet?
You got in. Fergie got in. Billy got in.
Right.
Billy got in. How many championships did the four of you produce? Zero.
Hey.
What a shot at it, Haley would say.
Hey. What are you, a Sox fan?
Yeah, I don't care about the Cubs. Yeah, they're not on GN anymore. Who cares? Well, we got
hey,
the Blackhawks.
Well, I shouldn't.
That Andrew Shaw, number 65.
Oh, now, hell. We heard about it up here. And all I can say is the big man is not happy.
Well, let me tell you this, Ruddy. I heard that he's going to take sensitivity training, and he's going to have the guy who took the SAT for Derrick Rose take the sensitivity training. That's what I heard. I also heard, Ronnie.
Is that you, Chet?
Well, yes, I took it for him. You know, some sportscasters talk the talk. I took the test. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about Andrew Shaw.
Come on.
The Blackhawks, as a make good to the LGBTQ, and the Q stands for Glenville community, here's what they're going to do. They have agreed between periods of the next game tomorrow night in St. Louis. they are going to be doing a short program based on the music of Chelsea Decker. They were going to do sit spins, axles, triple sal cows, and the like. They are going to do that as a make good. And what do you think of this?
Well, it does seem that a lot of those skaters might be a little light on their skates. In my day, you got to remember here, Chet. Back in my day, we weren't politically correct at all.
No.
So we used to call people a lot worse than Andrew Shaw was calling people. I'll tell you that.
Times have changed. But you know, actually, you're dead, so I don't know. You know, you got immunity.
Well, here,
I don't think anything's going to happen.
Well, you know what I'm kind of mad about is, did you see the pictures of that clubhouse at Wrigley Field?
Oh, the good. I want to tell you what a ding-dong dilly of a dinger of a clubhouse they're talking about.
Did you ever see the dump that they had us playing in for my whole career at Wrigley?
I know. It looked like Mother Teresa was servicing the people of Calcutta down there.
I mean, they showed us that from up here in heaven. They got a strip club in there.
Really?
I think Madden gives out Madden bucks after the game.
No, and I heard that they're now they're going to be able to slip a nice 20 with Harriet Tubman's picture. By the way, thanks to Ben Bowman for that joke. I still give credit to people. Why can't I please her?
We were sitting in a dump. I used to sit next to Beckert and Kessinger. In fact,
18 and 11. Okay.
That's right. By the way, you know what? I don't know if you saw the Chicago Tribune, but I'm in the Trib today. There's a picture.
The Tribune is a relic, and they don't report on anything that's going on.
There's a picture of me and Kessinger.
As dead as you are, Ronnie.
There's me. Yeah. There's a picture of me and Kessinger hugging Pappas, and I gotta say, it's from me from behind, and I gotta tell you that I had a pretty nice caboose back then.
Oh, you did.
I think it was all that bending over at third base.
Don't get into Andrew Shaw territory right here. Here's what I want to ask you, Ronnie. Do you remember July 2nd, 1967? Let me take you back.
Oh, I can't even remember 2 minutes ago there, Trent.
Okay, here's the thing. July 2nd, 1967, the Cubs versus the Cincinnati Reds. Fergie's on the mound. It's a Sunday. 10,000 people are turned away from Wrigley Stadium, as Jeff Gordon would call it. Here's the thing. Here's what happened. The Cubs beat the Reds, and they moved into first place for the first time in an eon, and fans poured onto the field, and you clicked your heels.
That's right.
Heels that you would not have when you were dead because...
Well, but now you know what happens when you go to heaven. You can pick the era that you want to look like for the rest of eternity.
So you picked like the 14th century.
No,
right?
I picked 1969, and I've got both feet on the ground, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I get it. You know, Rick Callender, are you still there?
Yeah. I didn't know if you were still there.
You're not still there, of course, but here's the thing. Rick Callender of blessed memory, because...
I remember him.
You don't know. Because the sunset is dead, he may as well be, Rick, I think he's still around. But he once said, heaven is a playground. Roddy, is heaven in fact a playground?
Well, I got to tell you, Chet, I mean, as much as I enjoyed living, I got to tell you that, and I love the Chicago Cubs, and I love Patrick. I love Patrick. Patrick, I miss Patrick. I don't want him to come up here, but I got to tell you, it's a pretty good deal up here. There's anything you want, you gain wisdom. I'm up here writing code. I'm writing algorithms.
Really?
I helped them break that Apple telephone.
Really? You got that, the terrorist.
If you notice, they didn't mention who did it. It was me.
No. Oh, that is wonderful. I knew they didn't get any help from the government.
No.
I knew that they got help from a dumb third base.
That's right, exactly.
That's
listen,
great.
Listen, Chet, I got a run, but can you hold on and we'll come back right after this message?
I didn't know that they had spot breaks in heaven.
You got to make money everywhere, Chet.
I have gained wisdom this very minute.
All right. Hold on, and we'll be right back here at WGN home. Former home of Chicago Cubs.
Yes, former home of the
Chicago Cubs. I'm Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN.
AM 720 in Chicago. And I'm filling in for Justin Kaufman in the download tonight. And we just had an interesting little segment there with good old Chet and Ronnie. And I want to now talk to another historical and famous man in Chicago radio, Mr. Bruce Wolf. Are you there, Bruce?
Hey, how you doing?
How are you doing? It's great to talk to you.
I feel like Clark Kent.
Is there a phone booth around?
Did you hear that as part of the reparations to the LGBTQ community that the Hawks are going to have? Wait, we're on the Hawks station, aren't we?
Okay. Yeah, be careful. Be careful.
I heard that. I know John McDonough.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're tight.
Wait, pick something. Oh, pick that up. Oh, that was a name you just dropped. I'm sorry.
No, that Jim Cornelison in lieu of the national anthem tomorrow night is going to have to dress up in a sailor suit and sing There Ain't Nothing Like a Dame. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to be fun.
But you know.
Yeah.
But you know.
No, I love the Blackhawks.
We all do. Yeah, that's.
Here's the thing about the Blackhawks is you know, I waited like 49 years for them to win the Stanley Cup. These are short-suffering Blackhawk fans. They get it every other year, so.
Well, I think, when all is said and done, I think that, it's tough to lose two at home. They certainly have been in this situation before, but you can't underestimate the fact that, once again, after they won that that Stanley Cup, they had to make some very tough, salary cap trades. And while Stan Bowman did a great job of stocking up the team for a run, it does take time for new guys to gel and to get a place. And if you remember, that's one hard thing about repeating in this salary cap kind of thing. So, the Hawks, all I can say is that St. Louis looks like they're a little tired of getting knocked out of the playoffs early every year, and they seem very driven.
Hey, have you ever seen a team that I think the Blackhawks average on penalty killing is like lower than Ron Karkovice when he had like an 067 bingo.
Ad. Wow, now there's a reference.
Yeah, oh, sure. Ron Karkovice. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. but I love the playoff action.
Oh, sure you do.
I actually watch the Hawks, the playoffs.
Oh, you love all sports. I mean, you love in general. When people think of Bruce Wolf, they think of love.
Sure, like I heard that commercial with Ron Majors in there. There's nobody I love more than Ron Majors, one of the great newsreaders of all time. Yeah, really.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for taking time out. I had a great time talking to Chet, and I hope he had a good time talking to Ronnie.
Absolutely. It was terrific.
Great.
Good luck to you.
Great. Thanks. Good luck to you and talk to you soon, hopefully.
Okay.
Take care.
All right.
All right. That was Bruce Wolf. We had a fun time with him. We'll be right back right after this message. And it's Elton Jim Toronto back here at WGN filling in for Justin Kaufman tonight. After the news, we're going to talk to Val Camaletti, who is the owner of Val's Halla in Oak Park, one of the great independent record stores in the Chicago area. And we're going to talk a little bit about Record Store Day this past weekend, as well as the resurgence of vinyl, and hopefully pick Val's brains and talk about some of her great stories when she worked for Capitol Records in the 60s, when Capitol had the Beatles and the Beach Boys on their label. Wow, those are glory days. If you go to Valhalla's, seek and you will find just about any record you have to.
Except that you have to go to Val's Halla.
Val's Halla, exactly. Okay. But
because if you go to the real Valhalla.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
You're in big trouble.
Yeah, you'll see Thor and the rest of those Norse
That's
gods.
That's right. And if you don't go there and you haven't died bravely with a sword in your hand, you won't get there anyway.
Yeah, and plus they burn you and put
There's
you out to sea.
Terrible things.
Yeah, like yeah. They
killed a wabbit. That's what it is. It's killed a wabbit.
Those Vikings.
That's the entrance of the gods into Valhalla.
Well, if anybody should know the history
of Valhalla. It's Val's Hala. And that is Val Camaletti.
Or anybody who likes puns.
Yeah, the owner of Val's Hala in Oak Park, which is, what, 239
Harrison? 239
Harrison. And you've been in Oak Park now how many years?
I have been in retail in Oak Park since 1967, so wow. That makes it 49 years.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
It'll be 49 years in July.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And
I am really old.
One of the great independent record stores in the Chicagoland area. I've been going there for years, and now I live sort of in the area. And so for the last several years, I've been stopping in there with some regularity. And half the time, Val and I are BSing for 2 hours, and
you
I have
bet.
To just say I got to leave. I can't stay here. And she's been great, and I've been able to get some hard-to-find things, not only just Elton John stuff, but other stuff. And it's always great to walk through a real record store. And the great thing about Val's Hala is it smells
like a real record store.
Right. I mean, there used to be some places, and I remember in the 70s, I was a little kid. I grew up around the Northwest Side near Six Corners. So one of my first
deluxe
record stores, Deluxe, you
absolutely.
Know it, right by the Portage Theater.
The Commander, absolutely.
Oh, I used to get all of my 45s there because he kept every 45, vinyl 45.
They were also the greatest square dance store that
oh,
I ever
really?
Lived. Yeah.
And I used to, the great thing too was they used to get all the promo posters.
Sure.
And poem, like I
sent them the Capitol ones.
The Mobiles.
I was at Capitol.
Right.
Yeah.
And they would give them, you would take them.
Sure.
So I've got all this great Elton stuff from like 1974 and 77.
Yeah.
That you can't even get anymore. And
they were there. They
oh
were
yeah.
There.
Who was that old man time. With the glasses? Remember him?
That the guy that owned it. They used to call the Commander. I forgot his real name.
Yeah, he was there for then his son or some, his grandson or somebody.
One of his employees, I think, ended up buying because
he used to be
over the
he
store.
Used to be in the front, and there's another guy in the back.
Yeah.
And he used to watch from the back, and the old man
they
used to be
there.
In the front.
They
yeah.
were there for years.
And
they
then, of course, Rolling Stone, which is at Harlem and Irving.
Right. That was a baby
right.
compared to
yeah.
me.
Oh, yeah. But, what I got a kick out of, there was a couple of places at Six Corners in Harlem, like on Cicero and Irving. And I remember this place was called Sounds Good. And you walked down. It was like in a little strip mall back then, what it would be amongst all the buildings, though. And there was two in the top on ground floor and then two downstairs.
Right.
And that place, you know, today is 420, you know, the cannabis day. And I was a little too young to understand. But when I walked in there, I was like, what is this smell in this store? And as I got older, I realized what really was going on in Sounds Good, because there were some times where there was nobody even behind the counter.
Oh, that was more than just a record
yeah,
store.
Yeah, I
then.
Think so.
Yeah, that didn't have anything to do with music.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because the records were really cheap, too.
Yeah, well, I'll bet they were.
But no, what's great about Val's is that not only can you find anything there, but if you can't, then you will order it for them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So. Well, if it's made, we can get it. I mean, if it's available new, we can get it. The thing that's fun is, of course, to have the used stuff so that can find used stuff that isn't available
right.
anymore.
Exactly.
That's really fun. But it's a combination. I mean, there's just as much new music and fun things coming out now as there have ever been, contrary to what some people think about, you know,
right.
I've heard for four generations now it's not like it was when
right.
I was young.
Right.
And that, you know, the same tone, the same inflection, the same, they don't write meaningful songs anymore.
Right.
My favorite response to that is, you mean like, the meaningful ones like Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lambsy, you know, the stuff with real lyrics.
Be-bop-a-lula.
Be-bop-a-lula. Right. So, you know, so there's wonderful stuff coming out every day, and there's wonderful old stuff to rediscover. The great joy of what's happening today is the resurgence of vinyl, not because it's vinyl, which is what everybody will, oh, yeah, it's because it sounds better on,
right.
well, sometimes.
Yeah.
But what it has happened is that the relationship between the listener and vinyl, was a relationship. And generally, it was also a public relationship. Three or four guys got together. One had enough money to buy the LP. You get together in a basement.
And you listen.
And this was usually guys, but you listened to the new Led Zeppelin album.
Right.
And you argued with Led Zeppelin.
Right.
Because they should have put that song on side two.
Well, that's the thing. First of all, I mean, first of all, unfortunately, what's happened, especially with the downloading more than when vinyl went away and CDs took over, is that what we really have lost in the last 10 or 15 years since Napster is there is less, to your point, less communal
listening
and less.
Not social.
And by that, too, we have the whole market. And everybody is so broad, is so niched now that look at, for instance, the older acts, the baby boomer acts like the Rolling Stones or The Who or Elton John or Billy Joel or all these people that are still out there, Rod Stewart, they can fill an 80,000 seat venue for one act.
You bet.
Yet Lollapalooza has to have 750 bands over 3 days. Because there's no one draw.
No.
That
and
you have
never
to have.
Will be.
The genie's out of the box.
Will be again.
And to your point, what not only was it important where you sat down and argued, but at the same time, sequencing how songs were put on the first song, second song, third song. How is side one going to end?
Sure.
How is side two going to begin? That was a big deal by the artists, is how
absolutely.
They would sequence the songs on an album.
It's a very important, it's an interesting phenomenon. In my youth, it was more like it is today. Okay, in my youth, we're talking about, you know, 3 centuries ago. in the 50s, when I was a teenager, it really was more like it was like it is today. It was hit singles.
Right.
There was really only one artist, pop or popular artist, who was making albums that had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that was Frank Sinatra.
Right.
He was the only one.
In the Wee Wee Hours and all those.
In the Wee Small Hours and Sinatra Sings for Only the Lonely.
Right.
He would never have put a Snap Your Fingers Sinatra song in the middle of one of those albums.
Right.
It was just not done.
Yeah.
But nobody else was doing that. It was a pop, your pop hit, and it was all filler.
Right.
By and large. Now, that wasn't true in jazz or classical, but in pop music.
Yeah.
And then came the era of albums. And I'm talking now 60... Well, really began with the Beatles.
With Sgt. Pepper, pretty much, too, right?
Pretty much. Well, Rubber Soul and Revolver also.
Yeah, but that was the one where all of a sudden...
But the Beatles were kind of the beginning of that, where... And then when it became the rock era, when you get into... When you left rock and roll and went into rock and went into the classic rock period... The Yes, the Emerson, Lake and Palmer, the Genesis,
the prog rock kind of stuff.
All of that, it became an album to the point where if you had a hit single and you had a bunch of fans and you had a hit single, they no longer cared about you because you were selling out.
Yeah, definitely.
So when Led Zeppelin had Stairway to Heaven, some of those early fans, that was 4 albums into it. Some of those early fans of Zep 1 and Zep 2 were like, oh, man, they sold out
because
they have
a
hit.
So now you're obviously over the last several years, because let's face it, I'm sure that you, there's a great documentary now called All Things Must Pass. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't seen it yet.
Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks' son, put together about the rise and fall of Tower Records. So we've seen the major chains all go away.
Yeah, they're all gone.
And the independents like you are still hanging on. And I'm sure over the last 10 or 15 years, it's been a tough road to hoe.
Over the last 20.
Yeah, so now my question is, with this resurgence of vinyl, for whatever reason, whether it's a hipster thing to do.
A little of all of those.
Yeah, it's a little of that. I mean, from my standpoint, it's great to see this because I grew up in a time when I started buying records in the early 70s,
you know, I've been through all of that. So I've been through the 45, the album, the CD,
right,
the download, and now back to vinyl again.
Yeah, right.
So I've seen them all. I'm a little too young for 78s, but
right.
But my point is that we've seen this, and hey, I'll be the first to admit. I mean, I had a huge vinyl album collection, and when CDs came out, the sound was better.
Well,
on some, well, you know, I mean,
some of it.
I'm just saying. I mean, all of a sudden, I understand. Yeah, I mean, they were making CDs off of horrible master things. I understand that, but when it got to a point where they were starting to use digital recordings, and recording right onto the digital copies, there were some. I listened to some albums that I had for years, and there were instruments I never heard before.
Right.
That were there. So CDs. Right. I mean, it's now very trendy to just trash the CD, but the CD did elevate, and did give the whole record industry another big shot in the arm.
Absolutely. But you know what's really phenomenal about, you know, there's all the talk about how vinyl is so much better and how it's wonderful and all that thing. What is really phenomenal that's happened in the industry in the last 25 years or 30 years is how much they have improved CD sound. Those initial CDs, I mean, if you listen to early Motown CDs that came out, they were so abominable.
Oh, they were terrible.
They were
unlistenable. Were a lot, well, they were, like I said, they were making CDs off of horrible masters.
And now, one of the most interesting things that happened is when they last did the last remaster on the Stones catalog on CD, the compliment that they received the most from the sound people were, wow, they made these sound as good as LPs. So what they have done is learned to take that ticky-tacky sound that came out of early digital recordings and make it sound much, much better.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here, but we're going to be back with Val Camaletti from Val's Halla, the great record store in Oak Park. We're going to be talking about more about just vinyl and records in general, and also going to try to pick. That meant just to, but what I'm talking about is pricking your finger, right?
Yeah.
Pick Val's brain about some of her great stories from her days at Capitol Records, which is amazing. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back at WGN 7. Right now is Val Camaletti from Val's Halla in Oak Park. And so this past weekend was Record Store Day, which started, about 9-10 years ago?
This was the 9th year. I kept saying the 6th, so I don't know where I was.
Just got turned around.
It was the 9th. I just turned it upside down.
And this was started by the record industry or the record stores to sort of help independent. How did it start?
We don't really know a lot. It turns out that it was a group of people who were in retail who got together and created something called recordstoreday.com. And they have been responsible for starting the whole idea, and then they have been the liaison with the record labels, sort of working with them and persuading them that it's a good idea to put out some interesting stuff that people might be interested
in. To drive traffic to your stores.
Right. Really to celebrate the independent record stores. I mean, just to come in, even if you didn't buy anything, just to come in and
say
hello.
Just to come into a record store, right.
Yeah, just to come into a record store and celebrate an independent record store. Well, of course, the cat got out of the bag, and it is now insane.
And now you have a huge, now tell this, you were, so you opened, this
we
was
opened
on Saturday.
We opened 2 hours early, Saturday. We opened 2 hours early, we opened at 9 instead of 11. I got there about 8 o'clock, and I asked the first person in line what time they got there, and they got there at 4:45.
Because the idea is that there's only X amount of product of this hard-to-find stuff that's released on this day only. And you can't hold it for anybody, so it's first come.
Oh, no, man, the rules are really stringent.
So it's first come, first serve. So that's why people were literally in line for
quarter
4 hours.
Quarter to five in the morning. And our customers are late birders. I've heard stories. I mean, the guy who owns Dusty Grooves and I were on with Dave Hoekstra here on NGN last year before Record Store Day.
Uh-huh.
And their line starts about 2 a.m.
Wow.
And we saw some stuff on Facebook this year of some people who were saying, okay, only 23 and a half hours left.
And you had, and so you made a full day of it. You had live bands.
Oh, God. Yeah, we have a stage on this store. If anybody was ever in my old store, if anybody wanted to play, they would have had to play single file.
Right.
Because the store was only 9 feet wide, the original store. This store, we have a stage, a real stage with a sound system. So we had seven bands, thanks to, I have to give a shout out to Bill Cavanaugh, who owns Bob Dog Studios in Oak Park. And he curated the stage. He had seven bands. They were awesome. And so we had a great day. We had a great day.
Well, that's good to hear. We're going to keep Val after the news, so we're going to have more about Record Store Day, a little bit more vinyl, and we'll see if we can get some Beatles and Beach Boy stories out of you, too, before you leave. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. No switching. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. Filling in for Justin Kaufman in the download tonight, be on till 11. My guest right now is Val Camaletti from Val's Hala in Oak Park at exactly 239 Harrison in Oak Park. One of the great independent record stores in the Chicago area. Been in Oak Park for what, over 40 years? Almost 50?
Almost 50.
And this is your second location. You had a first location closer to off of
on South Boulevard, which was right, Oak Park Avenue Oak Park and the Green Line.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then now you've moved into sort of the Arts District.
That's the Arts District on Harrison Street, right?
And you've got certainly a much bigger space.
You know, the space is actually not a whole lot bigger, Jim,
really?
But it's configured without a wall in the middle.
That helps.
The original store was actually an alleyway, and then we used the adjacent storefront. But the original store was like 9 feet wide and about 35 feet long or whatever, so... everything was in corners and things, so it just looks very different. So
now we were talking about this resurgence of vinyl over the last couple of years.
Yes, bless their hearts.
But now, so when you how quick were you noticing that this was happening in your store?
It's been creeping around for about, I would say, between 5 and 10 years. But it's
even 10 years.
Yeah, I mean...
But 10 years ago, I couldn't find a turntable.
Well, no, they were there. They weren't as visible as they are now.
But, I mean, now record companies are reissuing stuff
roughly,
on vinyl.
Roughly speaking, the dollar figures are, at least as I have read them, in 2005, so that would be, 11 years ago, it was at the bottom of the barrel. There were maybe 500,000 new pieces of vinyl sold in the entire United States. This last year, there's something around 12 million. Now, the big burst has been the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's really been. But as you say, independent, I mean, when we think that Record Store Day has been around for 9 years, so that the first couple of years were slow, but that push toward resurgence began about 9 years ago.
Now, one of the things that you're seeing now is most bands, when they're putting out new albums, they're putting out a vinyl edition.
Usually with a download code,
right,
so that people don't have to buy the CD they are still putting out the CD.
Definitely. Now, the thing that they're making a big deal about is this 180 grade.
180 gram.
Gram. So now my question is, because I remember buying some albums in the 70s and 80s, and those things were like soggy pizza. Some of those things...
Not only were they were meant to be, and there was a reason for it. The reality is that those bendable, what was called Dynaflex by RCA, that was the name they used for their particular ones, and we used to, part of our sales pitch when we were showing them to people was that we could bend them in half, and when you put them back on the turntable, the needle would track anything. The reality is that those bendable records will track more easily, and there is less danger. On a 180, if it's warped... You're done for.
Oh, really?
That needle will come slamming down.
Oh.
However, supposedly, and I don't know, anything at all about the technology and why thick records that are 180 grams.
Right.
I mean, 78s were thick, too, but, you know, they crack just if you breathe on them, they crack. So it's not worth talking about with me because I have no idea.
I was just because I didn't know if that was technology
supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but they're pushing it that way, but truth is that if I'm going to take a chance, but the problem is that it doesn't matter because you don't have a choice.
Right. That's what
they're coming out as 180s, and that's what you got to buy if you want it in vinyl.
Now, what I find funny too is that when I see now, because I still kept most of my albums, there was a point where, you know, a lot of used record stores were getting all this product because people were
like me.
We're getting rid of their record collections.
That's my biggest problem with this vinyl resurgence.
Yeah, you know, and so
is to get the good used stuff.
Oh, so you're still looking for good used stuff, huh?
Oh, that's still my primary.
Because now people are hoarding it. Because now it's the cool thing.
Well, now it's harder to get. You know, it's the stuff that we couldn't give away in our five for a dollar
right
bins.
Now
now we can't get to sell used.
That's a good problem to have, though, right?
Well, no, because I want the used ones.
Right.
I mean, there still are customers, first of all, that would prefer to find used ones.
Yeah, it's the hunt.
We can still offer used product at a little cheaper. It's not as cheap as it was,
right,
you know, but it can save people a little money. And but now it's just frustrating because we don't see it as often.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, because my point was that I've still got most of my albums, and so now they're not only issuing new albums when they come out, but they're reissuing some old albums.
Well, that's what they're doing. That's what most of the stuff
and
is.
And so I get a kick
out
of it because these new albums on this 100
180,
they're what? How much retail?
Oh,
25?
20 to 35.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, I've got that album. I paid $3.99.
Oh, sure you
and
did.
It's the original.
Yes.
And this is they're doing a good job of reissuing these and with the same artwork and all that.
Well, not only the same artwork. In most cases, they are simply making more. I mean, there may be, you know, that's now you're running into a whole bunch of other issues involved with this whole vinyl resurgence thing. You get the, oh, but I want an original.
Right.
Well, let me tell you something. If you bought Pepper when I was at Capitol Records on the day it was released,
In June of 67,
you could have bought copy number 8.
Right.
Or copy number 70,322 or copy number 247,000.
Right.
So what's an original?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even all 250,000 copies were not the same master.
Exactly.
They could only get 70 or 80,000 off of a master. So, and you wouldn't know which ones you got because nobody told you.
So you mean to tell me that Ringo Starr didn't sell back his number one from the White Album to you?
No, he didn't. And most of the other numbers on the White Album,
yeah, because those were stamped. Yeah,
yeah, but they don't. They're not real.
Oh,
they're not really.
Oh no!
The
don't
numbers.
Tell me that.
No, no. The one that says 092473.
Right, yeah.
That's not really.
Oh, Val.
2,900. No.
Why don't you
sorry.
Tell me? Why don't you just tell me there's no Santa?
Oh, you thought there was?
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Val Camaletti to talk more about vinyl and where it's going, or is it? Have we hit the apex? Who knows?
Better not.
That's not good for business. And hopefully, we'll get some a few little stories here, quick stories about Val, because she worked at Capitol Records.
Yes.
When the Beatles and the Beach Boys were both on that label.
1962 to
1967. That is awesome. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN Radio, AM 720 in Chicago. It's about 921.
be with you here until 11. We're talking to Val Camaletti from Valhalla here in the Oak Park. Been there for 40 years, one of the great independent record stores. After we talk to Val a little later, we're going to talk a little politics with my friend Doug O'Brien, who's going to give us a little insight. You always wonder, who is this Republican establishment they keep talking about? Doug is one of them, and he's damn proud of it. And we're going to hear what the establishment has to say. And then we're going to do a little pop culture club with Mikayla to kick things off because or get things done. Because it is 420, man. And so maybe we'll end the show on a nice little cool breeze and some stoner music just to feel the vibe. But first, as I said, we're talking to Val here, and she's been giving us some insights on this new resurgence in the vinyl world, which has certainly helped your business as an independent record store. And it just was Record Store Day over the weekend, and it sounds like you said you had lines, which this is so great to hear, that you literally had, you opened up at 9, and you had people waiting in line from 4 a.m., and it went down the block.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And one other reason that it's really fun, and that is the passion with which young people are buying music who buy vinyl.
Yeah.
It's a different
The one thing I used to love doing when I would buy an album is I would open it up, I would lay down on the floor, I would look at the album. Hopefully it had an gatefold, so it opened up.
Yeah,
so there was more album art and more pictures. And hopefully the lyrics were there, either on a separate lyric sheet in the fold or on the album. I would read the liner notes. I would read everything about who the musicians were on each song. And I really, and then, as I said, what you talked about, Yes, and some of these bands where the album art is just as important as the album itself.
Absolutely.
Sticky Fingers with the zipper on it. And my own beloved Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy was a work of art. If you pull that gatefold open, it was a huge
opened up to a huge thing.
And inside, there was a poster of the album.
Yep.
And a lyric book and a scrapbook.
Yeah.
That was Elton John at its pinnacle in 1975. But that was so great about the, that's what I think what people are reacting to. It was an experience. It wasn't just, unfortunately, I believe a lot because of
the, it was a relationship.
Well, the convenience of music, sadly, it's brought it into more people's hands.
Absolutely.
People have more access to it. But sadly, it's also, I think, made it a commodity. It's less important. It's less an event.
Well, it's
unless you do something with vinyl where you are forced to sit down and listen to that first album and turn it over.
Yeah. The absolute reality is that music has taken a place along with there so many other things. There are the same 24 hours in a day.
Right.
There are 140 channels. There's a computer. There's a phone that does everything but wash the floor on its own.
Right.
There are video. I mean, the video world is an entirely, the video game world is an entire world that most of us or many of us know nothing about. And that's got to fit in. I mean, when you're talking about the era that you're talking about, there was a bowling team.
Yeah, there weren't as many distractions. Everybody was not fighting for the same 24 hours.
No, music was the be-all and end-all. Yeah. You walked into my store in the 60s and the 70s, and the chances are when you walked in, I could take probably a pretty good stab at where you were musically. It was everything. It was a be-all and end-all.
We've got a phone caller here. Let's see. It's Bobby from Cicero. You there, Bobby?
Hey, Elton, Jim, and Val. This is Chopper Bobby from Cicero.
Hi, Bobby.
How's it going, man?
Hey. Yeah. Man, listen to the station all day long. Val, we've been going to you since we were teenagers going to Led Zeppelin shows here in downtown, and we love it. We love everything about the whole. We still got stacks of albums.
Awesome.
And my brother David, he's a draftsman, but he's a real good artist. He's a musician, and he long time ago he received a book. I don't know if it was a gift or what. But it was who did all the album covers for Yes, Uriah Heep? I think it was Roger Dean.
Oh, that sounds, I don't know them all. I know that Maxwell Parrish was one of the people who did a bunch of the psychedelic posters in the 60s and early 70s. I don't, that Roger Dean name sounds familiar. That may be right. I don't know the artist on those. But yeah, there were books of those. I have a huge book at the store that has like hundreds of just covers from that period.
I'm not sure if it was covers or just Roger Dean's work, but the book was probably 3/4 inch thick.
Oh yeah,
and it was—I mean, them Yes covers with the big fish on the mushrooms. Like, I mean, you could just look
oh yeah,
at the
album art cover. But album art cover goes back to the 50s and the 40s and the 50s as being truly wonderful stuff. It's a whole world all its own.
Thank you, Bobby. And, you know, I got to just mention real quickly because we're going to have to run here. You worked for Capitol Records.
I did.
You had a chance to see the Beatles.
I did.
At Comiskey Park.
I did.
And you didn't go.
You betcha I didn't go.
And why didn't you go?
I didn't go because I was not 14.
But it's
the
Beatles!
I was 23.
It's the Beatles!
Yes, and there were going to be, as there were, 57,000 little girls there.
57,004. And the four people were the Beatles.
No, you don't understand. They were my band. I was not going to subject myself to interference when my band was playing.
I understand that. But it's history.
No.
Yes.
It's not history. Not, it wasn't history then. It wasn't history then, and they were going to interfere with my band.
And they never toured again after that.
And that's why.
Oh, geez.
And if I had been there, it wouldn't have helped.
Oh, God. Let me thank Val Camaletti for coming in here for the last 45 minutes or so and talking
it's
about record stores and vinyls and music and how she didn't go to see the Beatles. Jesus. Still can't get over that. But thanks so much. I enjoy coming to your store all the time. You are at 239 Harrison in Oak Park. The number is 708-524-1004. Val's Halla. It is heaven if you are a record fan.
It's a collector's paradise.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Elton Jim.
Thank you. We'll be right back after this. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN 720 AM in Chicago. When we come back after the news, we'll be talking to Doug O'Brien, who's a political strategist, Republican political strategist here in the Chicago area, in Illinois. And he's one of those people that is actually the Republican establishment and damn proud of it. And so we're going to get a chance to hear. We're not going to talk about who's candidate this and that. I don't want to talk about pro-Trump, anti-Trump, Cruz, all these other people. I want to talk about the process. I want to talk about this delegate thing that we're talking about. And I want to get and about this potential of an open convention from somebody who is somewhat of an insider and who can give us a perspective as to what's going on in the Republican Party in 2016. So hang on for that. And after that, around 10:15 or so, we will do Pop Culture Club, talking about today, 420, Cannabis Day. And we couldn't get a stoner from Colorado to come on the show because they would rather get high than come on the radio show and talk about their business.
Were their stoners better than our stoners?
I guess. I don't know.
How does that work?
I don't know. But that's the typical stoner. Hey, dude.
Is there some criteria?
I don't know. I wanted to talk to a dubologist. Isn't that what they're called, those people that work at the doobie store?
We have plenty of those here, believe me.
Yeah, I know. I think we got a few upstairs.
Well, not on the 7th floor, anyway. Not in the newsroom.
We live in a political world. Politics is hanging down. Wedding bells ring and angels sing and clouds cover up the ground.
We do live in a political world, and we are going to talk a little politics, but I don't want to get heavy into, you know, pro this, pro that, or this person or that person. I like to get into a little bit is the process of what's going on here, because we're really seeing a very unique presidential campaign this year, 2016, not only from the candidates, but also from the process. And so much of this has really never been either understood or reported on to the general public. The political insiders have always known how the game worked. They created the game.
But now suddenly a spotlight is coming on exactly how do we elect a president? How do we, when our votes go in these primaries, do they exactly go to delegates? We're finding out that there are, it's not as transparent as we thought it was. And I'd like to get a little background as to how the system works. And is this system actually out of date? Let's not forget, it's been around for a long time, but we've got more people voting now. We've got a much more diverse type of population. We've got technology playing a role. So maybe this needs to change because we have changed. And those old rules may not apply anymore. Who knows? We are going to talk with somebody who can give us some insight on that. But first, I wanted to talk to Rob Martyr, our newsman tonight. First of all, it's great to be with you, Rob.
Trump all the way. Go Trump.
I've always had fun with you.
I love Trump.
Always have had fun with you on my whole time here at GN.
Absolutely.
Not only recently, but before that when you'd fill in. And as I mentioned, about a month and a half or so ago, I met Rob's two teenage boys upstairs in the newsroom before I was doing a show. And I had to compliment him on the fact that, you know, they had their heads down. They were playing video games or something. And I figured, he introduced me, and I figured, oh, they're just going to, you know, not even turn their heads up. And his kids stood up and shook my hand and looked me in the eye and said, nice to meet you. And I was very impressed. Good, you're doing a good job, my friend.
Well, you know, look.
You don't see that anymore.
Hey, you know, put them in a closet, beat them on a daily basis.
No.
No, you know what? They're very lucky. They're good kids. Yeah, and you know what? It didn't take a whole lot of work. I mean, they're just good human. Excuse me, good human beings.
Getting choked up there.
I am. You know, I'm very proud of them. No, they're good kids.
Well, good
for you.
I'm very
impressed.
Yeah,
with
them. I thought I'd mention that again because it you don't see that very much very often, and so it was good to see that. But what I wanted to mention, you know, we started the show and you were helping me out a little. I was talking about at the beginning of the show that my wife and I went to Cape Cod last weekend for about 4 days, and we drove around the Cape. We did the Cape. And so part of the things that you have to do when you go to the Cape is you have to have a lobster roll. Have you ever had one of those?
Absolutely.
Aren't those good?
Very good.
So we went to Chatham one day, which is one of the towns on the Cape, and I had a really good lobster roll, so I wasn't disappointed. So then we spent a couple of days in Hyannis, where, of course, that's where the Kennedys are, over by the harbor there.
The compound.
We did. We saw the compound.
Did you see the compound?
Yeah. As one woman, an older woman who we were talking to, said, I said, well, have you been to the compound, the Kennedy compound? And she said, well, you know, they're not really there much anymore. I said, well, yeah, you know, the Kennedys still live there. And she said, well, not the good ones. They're dead.
Well, that's open for debate.
I was like, wow. Okay. But yeah, it's very, and when you go to the Cape, it's very pilgrimy and it's very Kennedy.
Were they selling like those souvenir thimbles and silver?
Oh, yeah.
Mini
oh, yeah. It's Kennedy. There's a JFK
place.
Museum. The one cool thing outside of the JFK Museum in Hyannis, over by Hyannisport, over there, and I should say that I came back from my trip with vim and vigor. But there's a really cool statue of JFK because, you know, we used to summer with mother and father in Hyannis. And every time you see a picture of the Kennedys playing football in those tag football games or you see them out, you know, sailing, it was from Hyannisport, from the compound there. And outside of the museum, they have a really cool statue of JFK, and it really signifies his time in Hyannisport in that they have JFK in casual clothes, pants kind of rolled up just below the knee, and he's walking on actual sand and seaweed. So the statue is of him walking as if he's on the beach and there's real sand under his feet. It's very cool. I like that.
That is cool.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
But here's my thing. So we go out on our last night, and we go to this restaurant, and I order lobster, of course, right?
Got it.
Full lobster. The whole shooting match. It was actually stuffed lobster. It was amazing. They cut the thing in down the middle, and they stuffed it with breadcrumbs, and it was just amazing. So
did you do butter or garlic butter?
Butter, just the straight butter. Yeah, straight butter. But here's the thing. So when you anybody who's ordered lobster knows, when you order it before the dinner comes, they give you this little bowl and plate, and it's for your shells, as well as it's got your little accoutrement, if you will. It's got the crack, the cutter, the cracker for the shell, and it's got a little lemon and the mini fork. And then it's got some wipes for your hands because it's a messy thing to cut through a lobster and eat a lobster. And then, of course, they have the bib, right?
Yeah.
The plastic lobster bib. Now, most of these lobster bibs are white plastic. They have a cartoon of a lobster with a hat on, with, you know, with a big smile. Underneath it, it says, "You butter me up." You know, or "You crack me up," you know, and so you order this and they, and, you know, it's a messy job. And so you put this lobster bib on and you look like an idiot. You look like a rube.
Yeah, but you're with everybody else who looks like idiots.
Okay, but I understand that. But if you're like in a casual place where everybody's got them on, okay, and that's kind of the ambiance, you know what I mean? That's fine. But this was kind of a nicer restaurant. This was kind of white cloth restaurant. And yet here comes this plastic bib. And I said to my wife, I'm like, you know, I don't mean to pull rank here, but I'm probably ordering the most expensive meal on the menu, right? Market price.
Yeah.
And yet you dress me up like a clown. Hey, here comes my lobster. Look at me. I ordered lobster, and you know why? Because I got a bib on. I'm like, if you go to a nicer restaurant, couldn't they give you like a black cloth bib or something that would be subtle and you wouldn't stand out like you're at Kentucky Fried Chicken or something?
Yeah, but then it's got to be laundered, and then that drives up the price of the lobster.
No, it does. Give me no. You know, throw it in with the You know, if you go to Joe's Crab Shack or Red Lobster, nothing wrong with those places, but I'm saying that's fine to have the bib. But if you're going to a nicer place...
What do you want, like Egyptian cotton around your neck?
I would like a nice kind of black thing, shoulder-ish. You know, like you know how women used to wear those foxes around their necks? I'd like one of those, only black of cloth. So I'm not sticking out like some rube.
But everybody else is in the same
situation. No, because I was looking around and no one else. Here's the thing. I didn't wear it. So my shirt was all full of butter because I'm like, I am not wearing this plastic bib.
And you can never get those stains out.
No, but I had to throw the shirt out. But I was not going to wear the lobster bib that said, "Hey, come butter me up." So my thing is, if you have a nice, and I even told this to the waiter,
and he looked at you like you had nine heads. I'm
I said,
sure.
You know, I said, I'm paying like, you know, $45, and you're dressing me up like I ordered from the kids' menu.
I've always wondered why they give the cartoon animal on the bib or the hat or the T-shirt a big smile, knowing
that's
full
what I'm
well
saying.
You're eating cousin Chester.
Yeah, I mean he's all happy, yeah. And like the claw is like waving.
Maybe he's happy he's not being eaten.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, you know, like I said, you crack me up, and I'm like, you know, can't we be a little more, you know, have a little more sophistication on this? It's 2016.
But you ruined a shirt.
Just
put the damn bib on.
No, I'm not wearing a plastic bib. Sorry. I want a nice tailored black cloth bib. You know, I've been to some restaurants here in Chicago, some nice restaurants. I've been to some. This the first time I ever encountered this was in Los Angeles. I went to lunch at this nice restaurant in Los Angeles, and I had a pair of black pants on, right? And the waitress asked me if I want a white or black napkin to match my pants. Now, that's what I'm talking about here, Rob.
Yeah, but that's Los Angeles.
Well, I'm just saying. But that's a little class. That's cool. That's like, would you like the black thing? So now this white thing
Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, when Elton Jim is posed with this question, he goes, "Do you have something in kind of a blue gingham?"
Well, yeah, of course. Well, no, I always wear black, so it's easy.
White or black, you know. Yeah.
No, but
paisley.
I just thought that was nice, and I was not going to wear... And then, of course, someone has to, you know, tie the bib around you. I'm not seven. I didn't order chicken tenders.
Maybe it's a liability thing.
I didn't I didn't order chicken tenders off the kiddie menu. I ordered a $45 lobster, and hey, how about a little something for the effort? I'm putting out some cash here, and you're giving me plastic bibs. We'll be back. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN AM 720, filling in for Justin Kaufman, the download tonight. Be here till 11 o'clock. It's almost about 5 to 10. We got about an hour or so. We'll talk a little politics, do a little pop culture club, and set you through to 11 o'clock. I believe Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Patty Vasquez. So stay tuned for that as well. And as I said, we're talking a little bit politics here. It's been a very strange political campaign in 2016. I'm a political junkie. I love to watch all the shows every Sunday. That's all I'm doing. And I try to be fair and balanced, and that's not code. I watch Fox and I watch MSNBC. We've got both kind of music, country and Western. And but I wanted to talk to a friend of mine who is, we're always talking about, you know, the big thing now is who is the Republican establishment that's out there, and they're supposedly the anyone but Trump, and you know, they're trying to steal this election, and there's all these conspiracy theories, and they wonder who it is, and is it Mitt Romney, and is it Karl Rove, or is it Bill Kristol, or all these people. And I've got somebody who's a friend of mine who's actually a proud member of the Republican establishment. Isn't that right, Mr. Doug?
Today, maybe not as proud as once, but yes, I will. It's a fair cop.
Well, this is Doug O'Brien. I've known Doug for almost 20 years. We worked together in a past life at Hill & Knowlton Public Relations Firm. I was in the technology department and doing PR, and Doug was in the public affairs department. And you've certainly gone on to some great things. You were the chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. Congratulations.
Absolutely. When he was in the House, so didn't associate with those Senate types.
Right, exactly.
Very
but and you've also been, now didn't you tell me that you also were elected an alternative delegate to a presidential convention, is that correct?
Alternate delegate, yeah, twice. The you know, the delegation is made up of a certain number of delegates and an equal number of alternates that are now you've already got me going into the arcane jargon.
Well, I'm just trying to establish that you're a guy in the know.
I've been to several national conventions, been on the floor team for the RNC at the convention. And
you now are the principal of your own PR firm as well, right?
Absolutely.
So give yourself a plug there. What is it called?
Prairie State Strategies.
Yeah. So the reason I want to talk to Doug, first of all, the reason why I know Doug is because he and I used to have really, I always thought we had really fun conversations about politics at the office. We didn't always agree, but we always had fun discussing. And I always like a good argument, and I always like a good discussion. So I always got along with Doug. He also has a similar kind of sarcastic sense of humor that I do. So that always made the conversations fun. But I must bring this up to you, Doug, before we begin. And I am running a little late, and I apologize. So we'll probably get to you after the news, if you don't mind, if you can still hold on.
Of course.
But here's the thing. Doug O'Brien, who I consider a friend and a good guy, still has not returned the VHS copy of the Woody Allen film Broadway Danny Rose that I lent him in 1998. Now, where is my tape?
It's with the rest of my VHS collection.
I'll never forget.
The less we say about the whereabouts of that, the better.
Hi-yo! Well, the best is, I remember, so one day, I you know, we were talking about Woody Allen, and we were both fans, and I were talking about Broadway Danny Rose. I said, well, you know, I have it on VHS. He's, God, I'd love to see it. I haven't seen it in so long. So I bring it in, and I didn't care how long he kept it. So he had it for a long time, maybe even a year. And then he was moving. Remember, you were moving.
Yes.
And so I said, you know, Doug, while you're moving, I'm sure you're packing everything up. So this would be a good time maybe to, you know, return my tape. You know, if it was a library, you'd owe me like $70 already. And he goes,
if I wrote you a check, would you stop talking about it?
So I remember the look you gave me, because I'm talking about this tape like I just saw it yesterday. You clearly have no idea that you even borrowed it. And so you had this look like, oh, yeah, I'll take a look for that. And I knew right then I would never see my VH tape. Now, lucky for you, DVD came along.
Thank God. I was just waiting for a new medium.
Exactly. You waited it out.
Blu-ray, come on.
So we are going to talk a little bit about the process here. What does this mean about a brokered convention? And are the rules of presidential politics and how they are elected in terms of primaries and delegates, is this an arcane system given the way the country is in 2016 in terms of its culture, in terms of its technology, in terms of its diversity, in terms of its demand for transparency? So lots of things on the table, and I think Doug can give us a nice perspective. So if you hang on, Doug, we will get back to you after the news. And right now we'll take a quick break. No switching. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. Talking a little politics here with Doug O'Brien, a Republican political strategist and friend of mine. Does that song sound familiar to you, Doug?
It does. I've heard that a couple times.
Yeah. So here we are in 2016. It's been, to say the least, an unorthodox and completely unpredictable type of presidential election on both ends of the aisle. Obviously, the Republican side is getting a lot more attention because of Donald Trump, but certainly the Hillary Clinton-Bernie Sanders debate and race would be just as controversial if things weren't so crazy on the Republican side. I mean, really, both sides, this is just, you know, I mean, obviously it looks like Hillary's going to win, but if you look at this, everything is upside down, right?
Well, I think certainly in Trump, you've got a larger than life character, somebody who really sucks all the oxygen out of the room, if you will, and something that is pretty unprecedented in our politics. But I mean, we've certainly had long drawn out primary battles before. Now, we haven't had them. We haven't had them really in recent memory. I mean, the Obama Clinton primaries went pretty late, and it was certainly well into late spring before that was decided.
But it was a foregone conclusion.
Well, it was a foregone conclusion in the previous fall that Hillary was going to walk away with the nomination. And
right.
This upstart senator from Illinois, who does he think he is? But you know, again, it was something that we really hadn't seen on the political landscape before, and we have not seen the likes of Donald Trump before. And you know, he just he talks about the rules being rigged. The biggest thing is he doesn't comport himself according to the conventional behavior in the political realm. And that's what makes him so fascinating and makes him such a trailblazer. Nobody's ever seen anybody like this before.
Now you have, we talked earlier, you have certainly been, on the Republican in Illinois, scene, Republican Party scene here in Illinois for a good 20 years. And you've been in the inner circle.
I don't know how good it's been. But
well, I'm just saying, you've been in the inner circle. You were chief of staff when Mark Kirk was a congressman. So you've certainly been close to the seats of power in government. And you've been a part of the Republican Party here in Illinois. So my question is, you know, it seems, you know, what I'm enjoying about this, I don't really have a horse in this race. What I'm enjoying is how the media and certain people, in the Republican Party are still in, it seems to me, the media wants the brokered or open convention because that's great for ratings in July. But I'm still watching after Donald Trump had 60% of the vote in New York. I'm still hearing the next day and even late last night of how, well, there's always Indiana. Since when did Indiana become a swing state? I mean, isn't there a point here where people in the establishment of the Republican Party have to just admit that Donald Trump is going to do this and stop creating these delusional, it seems, scenarios that are just not going to happen? Or will they happen? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's looking more likely every day, but mathematically, every one of these states has the right to send delegates to the convention, and they have the right within that state to select the process for identifying who those delegates are going to be. You know, there are a couple things folks need to keep in context. This isn't really that archaic a system, because really the voting in primaries for presidential delegates is something that really has only come about in a widespread way in the last 50 years.
Right, since 1960, right.
Previously, you had local party conventions that selected delegates to state conventions, where they selected delegates to the party, to the national convention, and they went, and they, you know, there was all the, you know, that's where the origin of the phrase smoke-filled room came from, and that's where those deals were made and nominations were secured. So really, it isn't that old of a process. But there's another important thing to bear in mind. The nominating process belongs to the party. Now, people may push back when I say this. The party's nominating process does not belong to the entirety of the general public. And it's very interesting. If you look at the legal documents that you use to file to run for office, the people who sign them are signing an affidavit that says, I, an elector of the Republican Party, sign this to put somebody's name on the ballot. The nominating process belongs to the parties. Now, the government will set up the strictures for elections if they want to have a primary election. So you go to this polling place and the votes are counted this way and the machines are used that way, and here's what you can do legally and not legally in voting. But the nominating process.
But should that still be? I mean, what you're hearing from people is that, well, it doesn't seem that my vote really counts. It's almost like my vote is a suggestion, but at the end, it will still be the smoke-filled room.
Well, there's a little thing that happens in November that is called the general election, and that is the constitutionally that's the Constitution doesn't say anything whatsoever about how Colorado selects its delegates to the Republican National Convention. And, you know, the nominating process is up to an individual party, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, the Green Party.
But if you want me in that party, shouldn't you value my opinion? Shouldn't you value my vote?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I should value your participation, depending on what in a particular state the process is. If it is going to a caucus, if it is going to a convention. And, you know, traditionally, the trade-off was to have a vote, a stronger voice in the party nominating process. You had to invest a little blood, sweat, and tears into the party. You didn't just, you don't just show up on a Tuesday in March and say, you know what, I'm going to help decide who the Republican's nominee is. Now, I haven't voted Republican in my entire life. I've never made a phone call or walked a precinct. I've never written a check. I don't even like Republicans. But I'm going to show up and I'm going to participate in what is essentially a party function rather than an election to office. So, I mean...
Well, that's a good no. I see that point. And I haven't heard that point before. And that's a good point in that, you know, you got to put in a little to get it some. You know, you got to put in a little effort.
The people who make up the elected officials, the party officials, the people who are out there year in and year out as the backbone of any political operation, Republican, Democrat, any of them, they have a vested interest in what is the direction of that party. Where is the party going to go policy-wise and issue-wise? And, you know, but you saw, like, as you said, in the last 50 years, you saw much more openness come into the process. Much more weight was put on the public vote in most states, much more public involvement in the nominating process. But, you know, you talk a lot about the Republicans, but on the Democrat side, you hear a lot about the superdelegates.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, you know, no, both parties certainly will. I mean, whether any changes will be made will be seen. But certainly the Democratic Party is just as, you know, confused or just as, in many people's eyes, disenfranchising the voter as they are saying that that's what's happening on the Republican side.
I take a little issue with that disenfranchisement.
No, I understand that, but that's what people are saying.
Right. Nobody's being denied the rights that are enshrined in the Constitution. That's in November. That's when you're electing somebody to office. You vote in a primary, you're not electing anybody to anything. Oh, the only thing you're doing is forcing them to spend the next 8 months marching in parades. You know, that's the only thing you're doing. You're not electing anybody to anything. You're giving them no power. You are giving them no authority. That comes in November, and that right, that franchise, is enshrined in the Constitution.
So
people need to keep the and there is much more voice in it, but there is a balance that the parties always seek between having the party officials and leaders in the party having a strong voice in the direction of the party and who it nominates, with allowing the rank and file members of the party to vote in a primary.
Right. Now here's the point now. So every point you make is very logical, and it makes sense in theory and in paper and on paper. But what I see happening here is that the people are not buying into that. And so here's my question. What kind of chaos is going to happen if this is an open convention, if it does get past a first ballot and Trump doesn't have the 1237 majority of the delegates to win, if either Cruz gets it or Kasich gets it, or they bring a white knight in who hasn't even been running and he is a wound up, don't you think that there's going to be chaos and a lot of people who are enthusiastic and want to be a part of the system are going to stay home? And then you're going to lose the election in November, which is what the main thing you're talking about.
Well, you know, to some extent, I think some people in the Republican Party feel like, you know, an old-time political prisoner who is facing the gallows the next day, and somebody kindly slips a revolver into their cell the night before. So there you go. There's a noble way out of this. I mean, look, the difficulty is, and the thing that everybody in the party is grappling with, is everything empirical, in addition to just sort of the intuitive sense of people who've been involved in politics for a long time. You look at Donald Trump as a general election candidate, and you see a lot of negatives. You see a lot of baggage. You see a lot of problems. How would you get this guy across the finish line? And that's not even accounting for people within the party who absolutely are passionately dead set against some of his policy positions, as they are supposedly explained on a day-to-day basis. But so they see a candidate that they think really, really is going to be very, very hard to elect in November. But on the other hand, can you afford to alienate all of those additional people who came out and voted in Republican
primary? And especially, I mean, as much as you look at Trump from that vantage point, if you're a Republican, you have to realize that if it's not Trump and those people do walk away and do stay away, then you will get Hillary Clinton, and you are in effect handing over the at least the Supreme Court, because not only is there one outstanding seat open right now, But if a Democrat gets in, I'm sure that Ginsburg is going to retire, and maybe even Breyer. There may be two or three or even four in the next term that the next president.
And you know, Franklin Roosevelt sought to stack the court, and the Republic endured nonetheless.
Right.
And that's another thing that a lot of Republicans are pointing out. It is not the end of the world if people make a stand and say, no, we are not going to materially change the nature of the party for Donald Trump's supporters, because there is a real sense that, many of them are not they're not coming to vote in the Republican primary because they are enamored of Republican policies. They're enamored of one person. That doesn't make for strength, long-term strength in a party. That is a cult of personality. That is not the long-term party platform.
Let me cut you off real quick. I have to take a quick break. We'll get back.
Yep.
I still have a whole lot more I want to ask you, so just hold on, and we'll take a quick break. But first, with Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, you can relive the best moments of the game anytime you want. So start your 30-day trial at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. We'll be back right after this. We're talking to Doug O'Brien, a political strategist here in Illinois, and part of the what we would say the establishment of the Republican Party, and he's making some good points here. As there's been a lot of controversy, Donald Trump is saying that the convention or the delegate system is rigged and it's against him, and he's winning the popular vote, but he's not winning delegates, and Cruz is sort of cherry picking off some of the people that he's already won. And I think you've made a really good point. What I've been most impressed about the point you made is that, you know, you can't just expect to vote one day on a Tuesday and take control of the party. And that's what you're saying, right?
Well, you know, that one man does not a party make. And that's a dangerous political trend.
Now, do you think, I'm sorry, but now just real quick, because I have to go, I have to get another quick break. I apologize, but I want to ask you this quick question. So do you think that between all this stuff that he's talking about and all these polls that are saying 70% of the people say that whoever has the, not even the majority, but the plurality of the delegates, do you think that that's going to happen? Do you think that should happen? Do you think that any rules are going to change or not?
One important thing is, that shows that Donald is not quite on target here. If the system was truly rigged by very politically influential and powerful people, if it was really rigged, Donald Trump would not have gotten within 100 miles of a major party's nomination. The fact that he has been able to come in and do this, yes, he's got wealth, but and he's got name ID, but if it's rigged, it's rigged. It's supposed to be rigged against exactly a Donald Trump type. And it's obviously not, because Donald Trump is certainly the odds-on favorite to end up with the nomination at the end of the convention.
We are going to continue with Doug O'Brien after the news, and we'll take a quick break now, and we'll be right back. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, AM 720 in Chicago. It's about 10:39, here till 11 o'clock, filling in this evening from 7 o'clock. Started this whole 4 pounds of radio baloney in a one-pound bag. Started way back at 7. I've stuck around the whole time. I hope you have, too. Hope you've had a good time. And continue the good times here. We're talking a little politics with Republican political strategist Doug O'Brien. And what's the name of your PR firm there, Doug? Give yourself a little plug.
Prairie State Strategies, Jim.
Yes, sir. So Doug has been giving us a little insight into this idea of the delegate selection that's been on the news lately, as Donald Trump has been making it his new rallying cry about how the delegate process for the Republican convention is rigged and it's against him. And Doug, being a part of the Republican establishment per se, has made some good points, I think, in terms of how delegates are chosen and why they are chosen. And it's not so much, as you have said, which I think is right, it's not so much that the voter is not being counted, but this is... the party is unto itself. The party is not a part of the people necessarily, right?
Right. It's a voluntary gathering of like-minded people. And that grouping can set up its own bylaws and procedures. Where it gets a little gray is because a lot of parties have decided to have primary elections. Those elections fall into the government structure of administering an election, you know, getting the voting booths and the election judges.
And most people think
flags out and all that sort
right,
of
right. And most people think that it's kind of one person, one vote. And it would be like if I'm voting for in the general election, or if I'm voting for a congressman, or I'm voting for a mayor in my town. And the selection of delegates is just a different set of rules. Now, look at it
this way, Jim. Every 4 years, we talk about the Electoral College. It has been around
right.
since the 1790s. And, you know, people say, oh, is it good? Is it bad? Should we have it? Should we not have it? The point is, we have it. Everybody knows how it works. Everybody who runs for president knows how it works. And you campaign accordingly. The rules are obviously there for everybody to see. It's a variation of pure democracy, but it's right there for you, and you campaign accordingly. You campaign in swing states and states that are in play. You run your campaign accordingly, and every candidate knows that. So to go around and say that there's some sort of secret, you know, switcheroo going on behind the scenes is really, I think, pretty theatrical accusation.
Now, being a member of the Illinois Republican Party, as well as obviously I would, you know, the part of the National Party, do you, I would assume are you anti-Trump? Are you anyone but Trump?
I can say one thing. I will not vote for anybody named Clinton.
Okay. So now here's my question. After yesterday, with the amount of the number of delegates that Trump has, and after a very convincing win in New York, which is an important state and a big state, and the fact that there are several primaries coming up next Tuesday on the East Coast, which Trump is expected to do well, if not do very well, and take another big chunk of the delegates. My question is, if this was not Donald Trump, if this was Marco Rubio in this position, if this was Jeb Bush in this position, with the same amount of delegates, with the same amount of momentum, or the same convincing victory yesterday in New York, would there even be a discussion about an open convention, or how important Indiana will be, or how important Montana will be? Wouldn't there be a coronation for one of those other two candidates?
No, there wouldn't be a coronation. There would probably be discussions. There would probably be.
You don't think that they would already say that Bush or Rubio has it in the bag?
No. I mean, if you still had candidates who were running, who were accumulating delegates, and you had other candidates who, while they'd suspended their campaigns, still had delegates pledged to them, what you would probably see is discussions among those campaigns and those candidates saying, okay, what do we do to create a coalition? It's like creating a coalition.
Right, but it just seems to me like there's a big push to say, what is the very last scenario we can make so it's not Trump? It just seems that there needs to be a reconciliation here, that this is reality. And as much as you don't want it, I'm not saying you personally, I'm just saying you collectively, of some Republicans who are so adamant against this, they keep bringing these scenarios that just seem like they're pure fantasy.
Well, I think that you've got to bear in mind, this is really... You know, you talk about the cynicism of politics. If you just want to be cynical, if you just want to be, if you want to be as venal as you can about it, you should be getting on board with Trump. Okay, this guy's inevitable. He's got a ton of money. Let's just get on board and let's try to get him across the finish line. And there's I think a lot of people are underestimating Trump's potential in a general. I think he's shown an ability to really get better at this as he goes along very quickly. And he's certainly got a very loyal following. He's got people who are very, very devoted to him. But the people who are standing against Trump in any circumstances are taking a very principled position. I don't necessarily ascribe to that, but I understand their point, that this is a gentleman who, for all his successes, for all the things that he says, some of which they may agree with, he does not represent the core fundamental values of the Republican Party. And if we nominate somebody who doesn't believe in the principles of our party, haven't we sold out? Yeah, haven't we just sold our soul? And why not? Why don't we just nominate? Let's nominate Brad Pitt. He could probably win. Who gives a hoot what he believes in? He's popular, and he'd shake it up, wouldn't he? So let's nominate him.
Oh, Doug O'Brien. That's what I love about a Doug O'Brien.
Brad Pitt. Well, wait a minute.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. Well, I want to thank
an agent on the phone.
I want to thank you for taking time and giving us a little insight. It was interesting. I think you made some good points, and there's some points that I hadn't heard yet. And believe me, I watch a lot of these shows, and you sort of enlightened me a bit. So I'm going to take another look at it.
A lot of people on cable who don't really do their homework too, and know a lot of the real fundamentals. Yeah. But it's great to talk to you, and everybody should remember when they're in Manhattan to go to the Carnegie Deli and make a snide comment about Jim's picture up there at the Carnegie Deli.
And also, I will be awaiting for the return of my Broadway Danny Rose VHS cassette. Thank you so much, Doug.
You keep waiting for that, buddy.
Take care,
Jim.
Okay, this is Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. We'll take a quick break. We'll do a little Pop Culture Club right after this. And it's a little Pop Culture Club here. Get it? Pop Culture and Culture Club. You get that, Mick? You get that joke, Mick? Pop Culture?
Very, very, very subtle, Jim, like a chainsaw.
I'm so sorry, Mick, that I've run over.
I was fascinated by your lobster bib story. I was riveted.
So I'm sure you were.
Side of the road. I'm sure. I was driving so fast when I heard it got me so excited.
I'm sure you were.
Stimulating.
Yeah, stimulating. So today is 4/20.
Yes, it is, dude.
Yeah, dudage. And I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show. So Sean, our producer, was trying for like 3 or 4 days to nail down. We were going to get a guy from one of these pot dispensaries in Colorado.
Right, and they were too busy.
Yeah, and so what happened, Sean? What did he?
I called a couple of, well, actually three exactly.
Okay.
And each response from all three was like, dude, like we're going to be busy all day. We close at 7, and, you know, we want to be a part of the festivities. So.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Mardi Gras, you know, yeah. You don't go down to Mardi Gras and say, wait a minute, don't you have time to talk to me? No, we're busy partying. This is crazy for them.
Now, 420, if anybody doesn't know, this is become like an urban myth and an urban holiday. Back in the 70s, the early 70s, some hippie pot smokers said that in California at a high school, we're going to meet by a statue at 420 and do a little smoking. And 420 was the time. And suddenly that with time became April 20th. And then it became that was the day that not just one group of people are going to smoke pot, but everybody must get stoned.
Yeah. And today, they even said on the news, I heard Allison Rosati on Channel 5 say, today was National Cannabis Day. And I'm just like, that's how mainstream it's gotten.
Yeah, I don't know I don't think that's good when Allison is pronouncing it.
Right. Now, here's my question. Was today a parking holiday? Did I need to feed the meters or not?
As long as there's no seeds in it, man.
Okay, yeah. I'm sure that the parking meters in front of the pizza places were free because everybody was
you go to a 7-Eleven, there are no Doritos.
No. Oh, are you kidding? I went by there today. That's right. The shelves are bare. It's
you can't,
like the place was looted.
You can't find a Funyun for 20 miles.
That or Oreos?
Yeah, anything. Yeah, little animal crackers. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk with, like I said, I apologize. We had so much to talk. I mean, once again, it's 4 pounds of radio bologna in a 1-pound bag. I apologize. But next time, I'm having you on at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
All right? So
we'll,
I promise.
We'll steer that boat right into the shallows
I promise you that. But but we're talking about 420. What? I'm not going to get into your personal thing. I don't know if you
were ever, if you do partake or if you used to partake. But if
I
you
used to, yeah.
Okay, so what did you do to create an ambiance? Like, what album did you pull out?
Well, the thing was, back when I was, you know, in high school and beginning of college, when I was enjoying a little bit of the herb, we didn't know about this 420 business.
No.
There was nothing special.
So you didn't pull out, you know, Dark Side of the Moon or Yes?
No, nothing like
or
that.
Yes, Roundabout?
Yeah, or the Who's Tommy. No, we didn't do anything like that back in the day. Now, you know, talking about the personal stuff, Jim, you know that I've taught special ed and taught high school, and we used to dread 420 as teachers because we'd look at the calendar every year, the school calendar. Okay, what day is 420 this year? Oh, God, it's on a Thursday. Oh, geez, the kids will be here. Because that's all they would talk about, you know, the ones that were into pot, the hopheads would be talking about 420, oh, we're going to get stoned today.
Oh, geez.
And just like, oh, geez.
Well, you speaking about pop culture, did you know that, remember the show H.R. Puff and Stuff?
Oh, sure.
Now, you know that that song is about smoking marijuana.
Who's your friend when things get
rough? Yeah, H.R. Puff and Stuff.
Sure.
You're puffing the stuff, which is marijuana, can't get a little because you can't get enough. Who's your friend when things get rough?
Yeah.
And also, not many people know that the Beatles got to get you into my life.
Was about that.
Is that Paul McCartney wrote that about marijuana.
There you go. And wasn't it Bob Dylan that introduced them to marijuana too?
Yeah, I think that's always the story, that he turned them on to marijuana. And I guess McCartney was still, remember, he got thrown in jail.
That's right, in Tokyo. He got in real trouble, yeah.
Because apparently he quit recently. But he was still doing the herb. I'm sure he was 420-ing.
Celebrating it many times. Well, yeah. No, I feel sorry for the people who are born on 420.
You see Paul McCartney sitting around the house with, you know, with 40 bags of Doritos, just all, you know, singing Eleanor Rigby.
It's got to be the vegetarian Doritos, you know.
Yeah, his fingers are all orange.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad for the people that are born on 420 because they get their birthday present, and then somebody says, "Oh, by the way, that's also your cannabis day present too." They get, you know.
I hate when they mix birthdays and a holiday.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did get concerned today because I was watching television this morning, and on Kelly and Michael live, Kelly Ripa and Michael Strahan, Kelly was not there today. She called in sick.
Yeah.
I think maybe she was at home, you know, doing a little blazing up.
I think she's just a little more mad because they didn't tell her that Michael's getting a plum job and leaving her show.
And making like $10 million a year. So.
Well, Mick, I appreciate the shortened version, but at least we got some nice bad pot jokes and some H&R Puff and Stuff references. What more can you ask for?
That's right. I mean, it's a great way to close out a show. You always save the best for last.
Well, that's what you can tell yourself. Thank you so much, and we will be right back after this. No switching.
Later.